What's going on, guys? Another episode of the Almost Made It podcast coming your way. This week, we had the pleasure of sitting down with ex-AFL footballer Damien Kafka.
We spoke about him being drafted to the West Coast Eagles, his foot injury that forced him to retire, and how he turned that into a thriving electrical business.
All that and more, let's jump straight in. Welcome back to another episode of the Almost Made It podcast, proudly brought to you by Cultural Club. Another huge guest this week, something a bit different. Our first AFL footballer, which is nice. Ladies and gentlemen, Damien Kafka, number 66 draft pick in 2014.
Yep.
Joined West Coast Eagles.
Yep.
We'll get into the whole story, but now a very successful business owner.
Try to be, I don't know if it's successful, but we'll
try. I'm sure it is. Before we get in, Maddie let me in on a bit of a rumour here. I don't know, you can confirm or deny.
I'm pretty sure it's true, man. If my memory serves me right.
Is it true that you were going to give up footy altogether for the round ball?
You were going to come to Melbourne City, I remember.
Yeah, 100%. Back like, in the day. Look, obviously, you know, European background, Croatian and Italian. And mum's Italian, dad's Croatian. I guess I was playing footy and it's kind of who you hang around at school. A lot of my mates all played soccer. So, you know, when we play school at school, I'd be in the soccer side. Olden play football. And not that I didn't like it. It's just I love the game, you know. So I went to a few sessions. Even when I was younger, I used to play. But I went to a few sessions. And to be honest, I was probably a bit more naturally gifted at soccer than football. I had to work hard to be good at footy. So
it's in your blood, man.
Literally.
I don't know how you got out of playing soccer, but there you go.
So look, each to their own. Like, you never know. At the end of the day, footy was good, but I guess everyone has their own destiny. So,
Sorry, just quickly too. What position did you play? If you're going to play soccer,
well, I would have played central mid.
Yeah, like, he's got an engine, man.
Kind of like
box to box sort of player.
Yeah, box to box.
Yeah.
Get in the box.
Yeah, so, look, one thing that I can rest on is we in year nine, or year nine, it was my last year at the school before moving, and we had a good side, man. Like, we went, I think, to state nationals. Like, we had guys that are playing in NPL now, then guys that are playing, you know, just Division One soccer at the moment. And I was like our central midfielder, and I'll still have it hanging on him today that I won MVP for the whole season. So a footy player that's got no idea somehow, I beat players that played for Australia, Victoria, this and that. So, you know, every time I see him, I'll just say, boys, remember year nine when, you thought you were crash out? If I was playing soccer, I'll probably be playing for the Socceroos now.
Yeah, no, not a bad point.
So, it's funny how it is, but nah, soccer was good. It was good, my heritage, football was the way I went.
How'd you get into footy?
Footy, it's actually a funny one. I was obviously doing Auskick like ever since a young age, but I did Auskick and goal kick. Which was like the soccer equivalent. And then my dad didn't want me to play. I was a bit young and I was 5 years – I would have been 5 years old at the time. And I used to go swimming just every Wednesday. My mum would take me and we'd then have to wait for my sister to finish her lesson and she would do squad. She's a few years older. And I remember who had a big part of I guess my start to my football journey, a guy, Andrew Scatamalia. He was coaching down at Kilo, which is my home club. And whilst the kids were my sister, like my mum had met Andrew at say Flippers where it was. And whilst the two kids, because Jordan and Julia were both doing squad together, he said to me one day, I was only five, he's like, do you want to go outside and have a kick? I got a footy in the car. I said, yeah, like as a young kid does. Anyway, we're kicking the ball, and then he went inside and I didn't know, I was five at the time, and I'm like, I want to play football. I want to play football to him like that. And he's like, man, this kid can kick. Like, and he would come inside and he's like to my mum, look, I'm an under-10s coach at Keilor. Like, I'd love to, like, have him down just to have a kick and this and that. I know he's young, but, you know, it'd be good to have him down. Like, my kids are there, Dion and Jordan and that. And so what happened was when I got home, I went to my dad and I remember he was in the back shed and I'm like, Dad, I'm playing footy. I'm playing footy. He's like, no, you're not. You're too young. You're too young. And I was a big boy for five.
You're a big boy for 27.
Yeah. So I was a big boy for five. And anyway, one thing led to another. I said, Dad, I want to play football. And I remember I think I started crying because he's like, no, you're too young. I said, mate, I want to play football. And I was crying, crying, crying. Anyway, a week later I went to the first training session and then that was the start of my journey. So it was from just having a kick casually. And then when I started under 10s, obviously I was quite young. I was only six or so, five, six. So I did 4 years under 10s and, you know, I was probably more interested playing with the grass than what I was, you know, looking at the footy and chasing the footy. So I didn't play often, but for a number of years, probably till I was about seven or eight, I used to do Auskick in the morning, which was like 8 o'clock, and then go straight to play footy. Like, and then it got to a point where, because I was training and playing footy, I was a bit too advanced for Auskick, so I'd try to take everyone on because all these kids weren't playing footy. So that's how my journey started. And then, you know, obviously it led to where it led. And, yeah, it was just by sheer coincidence of kicking a ball with a guy that's a family friend now, Andrew, and we went from there.
So were you a one-club player? Yeah? You at Keilor your whole
career? I was at Keilor my whole life.
And then obviously,
up until obviously.
How does it work in the like pathway in footy? So you play for like an EDFL club?
Yeah, so you play for your local footy club. Then when I was coming through, it's changed a little bit now with the NAB League and that. But when I was coming through, you play for Keilor. Then you have representative squads like EDFL, which was our league. Then we'd play against, say, the Eastern League, WRFL. And the key years, under 14s and 15s. And then from there, you start to get involved with your Calder Cannons, your Western Jets and stuff. Yeah. So I was a Calder Cannons boy. And then basically what happens is some kids, which I was fortunate, I got selected to go to Essendon Grammar when I was 15. And then you kind of lose that touch with local footy. So Keilor was, my home club, but really I didn't play a lot after about 15, 16 there because it was in between school footy and then Calder Cannons. And then obviously when you progress further, it's Vic Metro, which, you know, is your national championships. Yeah. So, yeah, like, look, Keilor's my home club.
Yeah.
I love the club and, you know, nine times out of 10 when I go for a run, I'm always running down still at the footy club. And it's a successful club. Like, we had a lot of drafted boys come out of there. Obviously, you know, Jaden. There was, you know, Corey Ellis, Paul Ahern, Daniel Venables, James Sicily. Like, there was probably in the space of, I reckon, 2 or 3 years. So we had that much of a superior team probably in under 14, 16s that 1 year level above me, James Sicily was playing. So every second year our side would be James Sicily, Jaden Laverty, myself, Corey Ellis, Paul Ahern, Nico Kearney, who was at St Kilda.
Yeah, I went to school.
So essentially six guys.
All AFL players.
Six guys out of 18 on the field. Other clubs were playing against, say, guys that made it to the next level. And then obviously Dan Venables was a year below. But, like, that was the success of the footy club, you know what I mean? Like, and that's probably why we would win by, I reckon, probably 100 points every week. So
sounds like fun.
Yeah, like we had good fun, man. And, you know, this year I decided to pull the boots on for a little bit back at Keilor. And it was actually funny. Like, we went through and and won a premiership. You know, we'd probably dominated the year. We was the class above, and it was the one year that, you know, I decided to go back and just try and kick, have a kick. I only played maybe eight games or so. But it was Corey Ellis, myself, back together. Then there was other guys that we played in those 16 years. And what we did when we were 14, 15, 16, we did at senior level.
Yeah. That's special, but man. Yeah, man. To be able to reunite and
it was crazy. Like, look, I missed the grand final the week leading up to the grand final. I had sepsis. I was hospital bound for a fair while, which I'm gutted about. I played the first final and got through. Then when we had the bye, I got hit with sepsis and infection. It was pretty crazy. So I was, you know, at the end of the day, you count your lucky stars, but, I was able to get out of hospital to just watch the boys play, cause you know, I wanted to try be a part of it, but, they won the flag and it brought back memories of, when we were 15, 16, you know, like it's crazy. So, and now like you look at it, 27, a lot of people have, you know, got their careers on, you know, happening and, wives, kids, this, that, like it's crazy, man. Like 10 years, 12 years ago, you wouldn't have even thought that we would probably be where we are. Like you wouldn't, back then you would have said, oh yeah, when you're older, but we're actually there now. So, it's crazy, man. It's crazy.
I always think about this as well. You know, it'd be nice to go back and play with the boys that you grew up and won everything with.
Yeah.
I try and play with him every year. I try to get him out of retirement. It's not possible. It's another story. So when did it like start to become really serious for you? Was there like a turning point? And then I know you mentioned like representative squads and whatever. How did that all come about?
So like when it started to become, so when I probably decided that AFL was what I wanted to do, and that was my sole goal as a kid. It's probably the year I was 13 to 14. I went through a bit of a growth spurt. I was a bit of a bigger boy. And I just said, you know what? I was naturally good. I worked hard, but I was a bigger kid and, you know, I did well for, like, say, a bigger kid. Like, I was a bit of a chubber. And then I just said, nah, I'm just going to work hard. And I guess work ethic and that type of stuff was always within me. Mm. But I just said, nah, AFL is what I want to do. So I'd look at AFL boys and I'd see that they'd run. So I just ran like a machine. And then things just changed. Like my whole life changed. I ran to the point where I probably overtrained and ran myself into the ground and worked too hard. But it would have been that 13 to 14 I started getting, I guess, my, I call them, you know, my key people that I went to. Like I was young, went to dietitians, you know, at 15 I'd speak with sports psychologists. Like there was exercise physiologists. Surround myself with good people. With the exercise part, I didn't really listen and trust them as much because I thought I knew best because all I knew was to work. But then when I started, as I grew older and, you know, there was parts where my body was breaking down because I was working too hard, things started to fall into place. So I started pretty young and Matt probably, like, can see the change from, say, year 7 to year 8.
I told him, I'm like, unbelievable. Yeah. I remember I used to be running when we were coming home on the bus.
Literally.
Straight out, I didn't be running on the street.
That was all I wanted to do. Like, I didn't see myself doing anything else in life. Like, it's either I made footy or nothing. So I gave myself every opportunity. If I had my time again, I probably would have listened a little bit more in my younger years. But if I didn't have those – if I didn't do what I did, maybe I wouldn't have made it because sometimes you have to go through those adversities and, you know, those overuse injuries or stuff like that to make you actually learn, okay, this is how you do things. Now, to be honest, like I'm not in sport and I'm not doing sport, but I would know my body like I know my body back to front. Mm. You know, obviously I got the fused foot and stuff like that, but I know my body back to front. I know what's right, what's not, what I can push through, what I can't, and ways around it, you know. So it happened at a pretty young age for me. But that's just why I wanted to give it my all. So like I could turn around and look at myself and say, well, I gave it my best crack. So, you know, that's all you can do.
It's funny at that age though, because like you've got nothing else, right? You're so focused on that one goal. I was very similar to you.
Mm.
You know, that's all I wanted to do. You run yourself into the ground. You know nothing better. You just want to work hard. It's when the other things start to come in that, you know, you start to sort of stray away from that goal. So I totally understand. And then from there, you got picked up by, was it an EDFL?
Calder.
Yeah, it was Calder.
So how does it work?
Yeah, how does that work? Because I've got no idea.
So you go through the system, and obviously Calder Cannons have their talent pathways. So you start there at about 14, 15. You go through development squads and stuff like that. And 16s, there's a carnival that you do play, and that's like kind of its first official team. Before that, it's more so training and just a couple odd games here and there, friendlies, you'd call them. And then 16s, you have a proper carnival, and it's probably like 3 games over 2 weeks. And then that's the first introduction probably to AFL land. They start to just slowly look at, okay, who could potentially, you know, in the future, what are we looking for? But still, it's not the be all and end all if you make those squads. Like I know there's heaps of guys that weren't in those 16 squads that got drafted. And then 18s, when you're 17, 18, they're the years. Like your bottom age year, which is when you're 16 turning 17 at TSC Cup or now the NAB League, you can set yourself up really good if you know, you're a constant performer and you know, you're consistent and you can, I guess, play with the older boys and have an impact, and it can really set yourself up for your last year of your draft year, which is, you know, you're turning your 18 year, because you go into the season, recruiters will know of you, they know what you can kind of do, and basically, like, if you do pretty well in your bottom age year, all they want to see is just constant growth. And someone that, you know, takes it to the next level in their 18s year. So that's how it kind of happens. Obviously, through that period, there's a number of trials and all that type of jazz that comes with it. And it's regional based, so where you live. I was fortunate, like, where the trial period, I was lucky. Like, if you prove yourself at local level and interleague, you probably don't have to stress as much at, say, a trial at Calder. Whereas some boys really, like, you know, it was an anxious time. Like, you can relate to it because, you know, sometimes, like, there's parts of your life where you're like, you don't know what's going to happen.
Mm.
And, like, that's how it was for some of these kids back then. And but at the end of the day, the old saying, like, pressure makes diamonds. Yeah. So sometimes the pressure was good to some people and they flourished. And then sometimes there was – man, there's talented players that are playing local footy now that honestly I thought when we were 16 that they were superstars, that now they're probably not even playing footy because maybe it got the better of them. And unfortunately that's part of life, what I mean? Like, because once you go to that next level, you know, a lot of people can you're entering a business at the end of the day. So, like, at the end of the day, footy players get paid good coin. They work hard for it, so it's they're deserving of it. And there's a lot that comes with it. But you got to be able to, I guess, focus under pressure. And if you can't, you won't really last long. That's why AFL clubs have all those resources available, so they can give players the best opportunity to make it. Because it is a big investment, man. Like, it's a massive investment, and it's only growing. You can't say, oh, it's like soccer is, you know, it's not as good. Soccer's a world sport. Like, this, you know, we're to 25, 30 million people, whereas for a sport that's only to 25, 30 million people, footy's in a really good shape. You know, it is tough, but like everything, like pressure comes with everything, mate, you know.
So going into like getting drafted, what does that look like? Do you know like, you know, before the draft period, you don't have like do you have a manager at that time? Or
yeah, like look, so, managers do reach out to you. Like it is probably a big thing because they try to kind of get the next.
To get to you, the next star, you know.
Like at the end of the day, they want to kind of get you, which you can understand because it works like you. Some people have, majority have managers, majority don't. But not that a manager is going to have any benefit or give you any more chance to get drafted.
Yeah.
But what they will do is they've got the experience through other players they may have that they can give you the resources or, you know, they can help you speak to the right people to get where you want. So everyone goes through that process. At some parts of it, at NAB League and TSC Cup, it sometimes becomes annoying. Like we used to have a pigeonhole and the letters would go to the quarter and then they'd go in there and then you'd open them and speak to them, like if you were interested or not. Sometimes it can be like pretty full on, like because at the end of the day they're speaking to the recruiters, so they know and they're watching footy. So they're like, oh, okay, this kid may get picked up. Let's just get him on the books. For them to sign someone, it's nothing major for them. Like you either make it or you don't. But also as it is, it's a business for them, you know. So they're obviously scouting as much as recruiters to try and find the next, you know, Chris Judd or something like that, because for them it's good. And also you want to partner with good people.
Of course. So is it an advantage to have one?
Look, at the end of the day, is it an advantage? It depends on where you're situated. Like if someone is really highly touted, I think it can be an advantage early on because they can assist with things that pop up prior to draft, like whether it's media and this and that, give you that assistance. Like it's not going to be the be-all and end-all if you do have one or not. But like if you think you're a chance to get picked up and someone approaches you and you connect with them well, comes down to a relationship at the end of the day, it doesn't hurt. They're managing other players in the league in the current climate. So if you have advice, it's only a phone call away, you know. So it's another third-party opinion that you can get. So, it can be beneficial. It doesn't have any negatives with it, yeah.
Did you have one?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did. I had one. But, like, then again, like, you know, my manager at the time, like said, we can give you the best opportunity, like, you know, to kind of, if you're performing, then yeah, we can get a bit of an insight to it. But at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, you got to perform.
Of course.
Like if you're not performing, doesn't matter what you have, like you're not going to get picked. So it's all well and good having these people, but you got to perform. And that's game day, you know? So, it was just more so having that bouncing block. So, you know, if you go into the next level, you've already got that set up. It's not something you really have to worry about because it is overawing for kids. Like you're 17, 18 coming out. A lot of these kids probably don't have jobs and they're going into a full-time, like, public environment.
Pressure's on. And
social media, pressure, else. This, that.
100%.
You got to understand with society, like some people don't have that exposure. Like, for example, say there's a lot of, say, country kids and stuff like that are just happy playing footy and they're really talented at footy. Then they come into, say, Victoria and it's like
different world.
Bang, bang, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so, you know, sometimes it is a bit overawing for some people. And also everyone's different. Like, people get mistaken that, you know, AFL players are some, like, you got to be this figure, right? But you got to understand, like, there's so many players, like, everyone, they're just normal people as well.
Human, exactly.
Like, they're human. Yeah. They're not robots.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, people can say, yeah, I can kick a goal 20 metres out right in front. Yeah. Or why is he doing that on the weekend or blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But at the end of the day, they are individuals. Yeah, you obviously have to abide by your contract and do the best that you can. That comes a part of the role.
Mm.
But also, like, they're people, yeah? So there's nothing – like someone that works just a day-to-day normal job, they're no better or worse than, say, you know, the best AFL player going around. So I think some people do lose context of that and, you know, now that I go and watch a bit of footy here and there, you hear these comments and, like, I just watch it for the enjoyment of the game, you know what I mean? Like, and sometimes I think, geez, like, you look back and you're like, yeah, I know you're passionate, but, mate.
You got no idea.
You don't know what's going on in their personal life, this and that. Man, like, and that's something that, you know, like, it will always be a factor, but going into the league, you got to understand that that's going to be the expectation. Yeah, you know what I mean? So you just got to adjust to it and kind of do the best that you can do for what you can give.
We're very much similar that because obviously we've been footballers as well.
Yeah.
And it's so easy for people to talk.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see on the headlines, so-and-so was out on the weekend. Yeah, he was out on the weekend because he's a human.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, you're allowed to go out.
100%.
You know, all right, in context, of course.
Yeah.
But people forget, man. Yeah. Like, there is a human behind that player.
100%.
You know?
And it is a big thing, and that's why, you know, like, social media and stuff like that is a fantastic tool, but also, you know, it can be a detriment as well.
Definitely.
And that's the way the world's going. For me, I'm useless at social media. you know, some people love it and it's been fantastic. Like, a lot of businesses and a lot of people have had a lot of growth through it, and I think it's fantastic. But also there's a line. There's a line with it. Like, just don't push it too far. Like, especially in regards to, you know, like, I see whether it's racism and this and that. Like, with footy, I think that's just totally uncalled for. Like, if someone, you know, does something wrong that you don't agree with in a footy game, you don't have to take it to that personal level. Like,
it's the keyboard warrior.
You think that person, when they walk off the field, they don't feel like tiny because maybe they made that stuff up or this or that.
Exactly.
Like, the last thing you got to do is cop that. And I think that's totally uncalled for. And it comes down to people just being uneducated. And that's what it is. So, you know, but then again, like, unfortunately, that's the way of the world, yeah? Like, you get good and bad. You get good and bad in everything. So, it's as long as people just know that line, that's the main thing.
So, getting back to your career.
Yeah.
So, when did you think you had, I guess, was there like a little inkling that you might have got drafted? Like, when did that door sort of start to open?
Yeah, so, as I said, I probably was a bit of an overtrainer, and, you know, I kind of just rolled through and, you know, I was playing good footy, but, like, I had to just stay consistent out on the park, and it was probably on my detriment because I was just, you know, I was one stage, you know, I was going to see someone to get super quick off the mark for my football, and then all of a sudden he was trying to turn me into a national 400-meter runner because I was running with national Olympic runners and I was keeping up with them. So, like, I always got kind of, you know, sidetracked. And I remember there's a guy by the name of Ian Kite who was the Calder regional manager, and it got to a point where, like, I was just doing too much. And going into my 18s year, he basically called me up, and I'll never forget it. He said, here's a piece of paper, athlete out of 10, footballer out of 10. I want you to rate yourself out of 10. So I did, I don't know, I think it was like athlete, I did whatever, 8. And then footballer, I did like 7. And he turned around, he's like, here's mine. He did athlete, 10, footballer, 5. And I looked at it and I'm like, what are you talking about, mate? Like, and he's like, mate, you're killing yourself. He's like, you have the talent and you have everything and all the tools to make it. He's like, you just need a harness. He's like, I don't want you to be an an athlete. He's like, yeah, that's one of your strengths.
Mm.
He's like, but it's actually affecting your football because you're running tired. You're doing too much. You're coming into games fatigued. Like, yeah, you're getting the footy and you're doing – like you're playing good footy, but you're doing too much. Like, you're going to be 10 times more sharper and that football will increase to 7, 8, 9 if you just back off and listen to us. And he put the hard word on me. He's like, if you don't back off and you don't listen to us, right, we're not selecting you for your 18s year. And that was like a shock to me because I'm like, mate, what the hell? He's like, I'm not, because he's like, if you're not listening, he's like, what are you going to do at the next level?
Mm.
You're not going to listen. He's like, that's a part of what they look for. So, mate, did I listen after that? And then I went under the guidance of a guy, Steve, that, you know, I trust, one of the few people that I trust with giving me a program, and he gave me a day-to-day program. Like, when it said rest, it was rest. I still did something, I'll admit, but it was like craft or like footy work.
Yeah.
It wasn't like go for a 10K run.
Yeah.
And then I saw my football go to another level. I'm like, geez, why didn't I do this earlier? And then I probably had an inkling like towards, you know, halfway through that year that, okay, like, yeah, I'm a fair chance to, you know, you speak to footy clubs and this and that, and then, you know, you get a combine invite. We go to the national combine, so you have obviously that's, you know, 70-odd players in Australia that go to that. I had a fair idea. It was just a matter of where.
Yeah.
So you don't have really any idea where you're going, do you?
Not really. You kind of do, like your manager can give you a bit of an inkling, like who asks a lot of questions, and that generally means that they're pretty interested.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what ultimately like ended my career, like because it fractured and that disease grew, was kind of that lesion that I had in my foot, like because everyone was a bit worried because there was a game I missed or whatever because I had a little bit of arthritis in my foot. You know, and it's amazing that's say what the cause of it was, but like things like that can scare people off along the journey.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I kind of knew where, and I remember on draft morning, I spoke to my manager, and he's like, yeah, you'll be right, mate. Like, and it was settling, but it wasn't because he's like, I don't know where. He's like, but he's like, you'll be right. He's like, don't stress. And I went to the aquarium that day, I remember. Just I've never been to the aquarium since. Man, and then, like obviously went through my day and then my life changed. And then a couple of days later I was heading over to Perth and a different time zone away, and, it was crazy. But obviously, you know, it was short-lived because of, you know, things that, you know, were out of your control, and I'm just lucky to be doing what I do now because it could have been a lot worse.
Definitely. Also, I wanted to ask, because I'm completely oblivious to footy. I've got mates with, you know, like Nick O'Kearney went to school with him. You know, you get a little bit of insight, but obviously speaking to you, it's another level.
Yeah.
How does – so you mentioned the combine real quick. How does that work?
So the combine, when I was doing it, geez, it was a while ago, I actually didn't do the combine because – I just got told to rest for it. We did a combine early in the year for AFL Victoria, and I think I busted the record for it. I think it was like 16:15 I ran or whatever it was, beep test. So like clubs knew that fitness wasn't the thing they had to look at. They didn't care. Like, to be honest, the combine for me was just catching up and speaking to clubs.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of just went there and just sat and watched. But you go through a series of tests, kick tests, marking tests. Back then it was a 3K time trial. Now I think it's a 2K. I don't know if they do a beep test still or whether they've changed that, but it was a beep test at my time.
Mm-hmm.
Do like vertical leap, all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like some players are athletically gifted and, you know, you don't make footy, you don't make it from just doing well at the combine. Like, there's some players that are really good footballers and they don't test as well, but they're just good footballers. They just want to see that you're in reasonable nick. Then there's a small percentage that are really athletically gifted, and maybe that confirms to a club doc, yeah, okay, maybe he's worth getting late because we could develop him. I don't know. I'm not on that side of recruiters, but that's the way I gauge it from just looking from the outlook. And you just go there for, I think it was like a period of 4 days.
Right.
You stay in the city or whatever it is, and you just roll in, and it was at Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
It was at Marvel, and, yeah, it's like just a combine, just doing all testing. You get to talk like recruiters, clubs, coaches. They're just kind of rolling around. They'll watch a little bit. You get to speak to them. You get to know, you get a bit of a feel for it, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, like it is, looking back at it, it's pretty surreal, like. It's pretty cool. Yeah. Like, everyone around Australia, like, kind of, well, not everyone, but the ones that are invited come together, and you see, like, you see your Victorian boys, you see your South Australian boys, your WA guys, and then some guys will know each other. So you intertwine, you have a good laugh. I guess yous are all going through the same journey. So, yous help each other, but also it's a competition. Course, like,
yeah.
Shit, like, we play the same position.
Yeah.
Like, he tested really good in that, and, like, I got to make sure that I got to do this, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of that will happen. But as I go back to it, you just run your own race and see what happens.
Just a quick break in between our episode. If you're wondering where you can buy all this unbelievable merch from, where can you get it from, Matty?
So you can get it from our website at culturalclub.com.au. Use the code AMI15 to get yourself 15% off. Now let's get straight back into the episode.
Draft day, you're saying you're at the aquarium.
Yeah.
What are you just sort of waiting around the phone, or do you go? Like, how does
So like some people, I think 10 or so at that time, you know, probably 10 to 12 get invited to the draft.
Mm-hmm.
For that top 10. And then you kind of just watch the draft, man.
Right, like, okay.
You watch it.
And you've got no idea what's going to happen.
Nah, like.
Jeez, that'll be shit.
And then, yeah, like all of a sudden, you know, you see your name called out. You're known as a digit first, which you don't even, like, I don't even know it. and then they say your name and that's it. Then all of a sudden, 2 seconds later, your phone's going berserk from, say, players messaging you, calling you, family, like, you know, coming and stuff like that. I wanted to keep it pretty, like, chill, because at the end of the day, I just wanted to be with my parents and family, like immediate family. And then whatever happened, if it did, yeah, okay, whatever, come. But I think they were already waiting in my street, because it only took me like literally, like I was hugging my mum and dad, and then all of a sudden, like 20 people rocked through the door, and I'm like, mate, you live in Coburg, you live in Brunswick, and you live there. Like, how'd you get here within 3 seconds? So I think they were kind of waiting. Geez, it would have been a letdown if, like, say I didn't get picked up. But, yeah, like.
What was the feeling like, man?
It was a relief, man. Like, feeling was joyful, but it was a relief for, like, how hard you busted all over those years and stuff. And also for my parents, like my mum, like, she's known as the cook, man. Like, at Calder, she would cook for for 60 guys every Thursday, you know, like, and everyone would love, like, she'd just cook for everyone, you know, like, and she'd take me to, obviously, every session, like, everything, like, and my parents, like, they obviously outlaid a lot, like, for what I wanted to do, like, you know, not a lot of people see sports psychs, but I did, because for me it kept me in check. and it was someone that I could trust. I don't like talking to just random people or my parents. I wanted to speak to someone that I could speak on that level. Yeah. And dietitians and this and that and everything to get better, the amount of footy boots, the amount of runners, like, man, it was like absurd, you know, like they would be there at beck and call. So for me it was just relief. Like it was like, oh, thank you. And then obviously, you know, it's one thing making it, then you got to go to the next level.
Exactly. Something else.
And, yeah, that's what it was. It wasn't like, for me, it wasn't an ego thing or this or that. I didn't care. I don't care about any of that stuff. For me, it was like, all right, now I need to start training harder.
Now the business starts.
Like, unfortunately, you know, due to circumstances, you know, I had to give it up. But whilst I was intertwined, like, I think everyone that knew me in that inner sanctum said, geez, man, this bloke doesn't give up. Like, he's like 24/7. Like, everything was football.
Obsessed.
It was football. Like, and those attitudes have obviously followed me with me, like, you know, coming into personal life and business. Some of them are demons, mate, where you're like, why you like that? Like, you're not playing sport. But you know what? That's just how I'm bred. Like, when you've been doing it since you were 13, 14, like, it's hard to kind of shake a habit. So I guess they're good habits, but sometimes they can get the better of you, you know.
So how'd you settle in Perth?
Yeah, it was really good. I loved it. Like, Perth was amazing. Obviously, I was injured pretty quick going into my career. So it was tough because Perth is, like, nice beaches, outdoorsy, like, you know, if you just want to, you know, be in the hustle and bustle and sit around home and this and that, like, you won't like Perth. You want, like, you got to enjoy the outdoors and going out. Yeah. It was good to bring up a family there, and the people there were amazing, like, so kicked back, chilled. Like, when I look back at it, I say, geez, Perth is actually awesome. And at the time, sometimes you're a little bit bored coming from Victoria, but you end up finding your rhythm. So, you know, a lot of boys, you know, guys that now, you know, who I got picked up with, Liam Duggan, he's a skipper there now, you know. So that's home probably for him. And it's amazing. Like, a lot of people that do move over to Perth end up staying because – it becomes their home and they're used to that. And then when you come back to Vic, kind of like, oh, you don't really like that hustle and bustle, the traffic and this you know.
Yeah.
It was really good. It was really good.
And then
I just wanted to ask quickly. So you got drafted to West Coast, started training, and then with your injury, was it an incident? Like, can you pinpoint the moment it sort of happened, or was it a gradual?
So you felt something?
Yeah, so I had obviously a bit of this lesion or whatever in my foot, and that's what ultimately people were a little bit scared of at draft time, and then it wasn't going to affect me till later on down the track. Like, it just would have become real bad arthritis, but it is what it is. And we were doing, like, I don't know, a match simulation type thing, and I went to kick the ball, and as I went to kick, I, like, kind of got dived on to tackle, and I was in the kicking position, my back foot, so basically my foot kind of snapped in three spots, and I had a fracture, but this little hole that was, say, in my navicular was always there. They knew that, but it was a lesion. We didn't even look at it. It was the fracture more so that we looked at. So I went through all the process and this and that for the fracture. The fracture had healed. The hole was still there in the navicular, but we thought nothing of it. Then, cut a long story short, as I started weight bearing, that hole, I started to get a more sore foot than rather than better. We got it scanned and the hole become bigger. So what essentially that fracture did was it just broke that cartilage that was that protection barrier and exposed that lesion to fluid and that, and the disease or whatever, it didn't like fluid, so it would break down the bone, and it was a real weak spot. So in the middle of my navicular, it was the fluid was eroding the bone. And because of where it is, it's normally seen in knees for what it is, but it's very, very, very rare in your feet, and your navicular is your biggest bone in your foot, and it lacks the most blood, like, and you need blood flow for growth, you know. So ultimately that was a problem, and we went to heaps of surgeons and saw a lot of specialists, and they're like, geez, this is very rare, like, don't know what we can do here. So we tried a lot of experiments in surgeries and stuff like that. They were pretty intrusive, and ultimately come to a point where, like, you know, I don't know, it would have been 5 or 6 surgeries later, they said, you know, if this doesn't work, like, we can't do another surgery, because, like, they're drilling into bone. They were doing stuff to try and promote blood flow. They could never grow back cartilage. So that was the lacking factor. So fluid was just getting in there, and it'd look all well and good until I started weight bearing. And then once I started weight bearing, where they drilled to promote blood flow for it to calcify, it was just washing that out as well. So it was basically eating my navicular away, but on the inside, so I was becoming hollow. And then they said, no, we need to fully fuse, you know, your foot, because there comes a duty of care where, like, we don't want you in a wheelchair, because once that navicular kind of concaves and collapses, you know, there's major problems. Like, that's holding your foot together. So, yeah, that ultimately was, like, a very long story cut short for what happened. There was a number of surgeries, and, you know, there was a number of specialists seen and stuff like that. It just was one of those things where, you know, if only, you know, medicine could grow cartilage. You know, yeah. We tried stem cell treatment. We tried, like, PRP. We tried, you know, we did surgeries where, you know, they'd spin your blood for 4 weeks, and then they'd go and coat it. They'd coat it with stem cells and all that to try and promote it. But where they had to do that, to snap open the foot to get access to it. So there were so many ligaments, tendons, nerves, this and that, that to get access, like, it seized like that. And the top and bottom and side of the foot was all fine. It was the inside. So they had to snap it open to get access to it. So the last thing to do was obviously to stop fluid getting in was to fuse the foot, so the joint kind of got bone growing over. So, yeah, 10 bolts, 10 screws, or whatever it is in there, and they packed it with bone so fluid can never get in there. So then your navicular's and all that's safe. So, yeah, it's something to obviously deal with, but, man, from where I was to where I am now, like, I smashed my rehab. Like, I knew – I always felt like I was coming back, but I knew, like, medically I wouldn't – I wasn't allowed. I had to retire.
So that's what I was going to ask you. Like, what was that like? Like, with your mind telling you, no, I'm going to be back, But then you got them like, nah, man, medically we're not going to be able to pass through this. Like, I can't imagine that position of, like, your mind's telling you one thing, but then realistically you're probably not going to be there.
Did you know, before your rehab, did they say to you, that's it?
Before the last surgery. Surgery we did, they said it's an experiment. So every scan I went to, it was like, okay, how's it going to look? And then everything was all well and good until about 8 weeks when we'd start partial weight bearing. Then straight away I would know. Like, I had stairs. So I'd crouch down or whatever, and I'd say to my wife, Joanna, I'd say, nah, it's no good. Like, this one's failed, and it'd only take a week or 2 weeks for me just to partially weight bear, because I'd feel that.
Yeah,
I'd feel that pain, and I'm just like, man, what the hell? Like, it was frustrating, and I could go into the scan knowing what it would be.
Yeah.
So that happened, you know, 5, 6 surgeries. Then the last one, it was like, this is we always knew that was going to be the last ultimatum. Mm-hmm. And, like, if it was Joe Blow and not wanting to pursue their career, they would have probably just done the fusion straight away. And maybe it wouldn't have been as full on as fused as what it was. But I wanted to keep playing. And, like, in the end of it, it literally come to a point where it was like, okay, your health comes first. Like for 12 to 18 months, I was crutch, like my leg was like a stick because I was in a boot and crutches. Like come to a point where it's like, okay, where's the quality of life?
Yeah,
like
definitely.
I couldn't do nothing, mate. Like I couldn't even, like realistically, I wasn't able to drive. I wasn't able to do this, that. Like it was 12, 18 months and I'm just like, it's quality of life. Like I just want to be able to walk without like pain. And, you know, when they're saying you won't walk without a limp again and this and that and blah, blah, blah. It was kind of like, man, just get me back to walking. Like, I just smashed my rehab so hard and like, you know, doing everything I could, like to try and fire everything up to a point where, you know, I've made a ridiculous recovery, but I'm still aware of it every time. Like it still flares up. Like at the end of the day, it's a fully fused foot. You know, there's its challenges with it, but also it's mental aptitude. Like if what the surgeon said would have been the case, like, yeah, sometimes I have a bit of a limp because it's a bit sore, but mate, like I still train with some AFL boys and like I'd say I'm still fitter than them. You know what I mean? Like, anything in a straight line is okay within reason. Yeah, there's some days where I'm a bit sore than others, but it's just more the powerful motions and movements and stuff like that. But I guess you just find a way to adapt to it. And my saying is, mate, when I'm older, I'll deal with the issues then. Like for now, I'm young. Like I want to stay fit and active. I've got three little kids. I want to take my son out, take him for a kick. I run around, you know, when the girls can start walking, take them out, do what they want to do, you know. I don't want to be crippled. Like,
no,
I'll hopefully, you know, I'll deal with that when I'm 40, 50, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's crazy how it went, but that's just – that's a very long story cut short of how it was.
Unbelievable, man. So what would – like, for me, it's just unbelievable. Like, where you're at now, man, it's a testament to you. Like, from what you went through to now, you know, you're running a successful business with a family. But what would you say, did you learn something within yourself through that period, or was there times where you were just like, man, just in the middle of no man's land, you know what I mean? You didn't really know, where am I going here? I'm not going to be able to play footy again. Did you ever doubt yourself, you know, in these times?
Yeah. At the start, I'll be honest, there was six to 10 months where I went off the – not off the rails, but – As a kid, I didn't have an 18th because my 18th was worrying about playing Vic Metro. Like, I didn't drink. There was the same guy, Ian Kite. My first drink I had was when we lost the TAC Cup Grand Final, and he made an agreement at the start of the year that if we make it, you're drinking. So that was my first drink, man. Like, so I knew nothing better. Everything was football. But one thing I'll say is with the support of my family, you know, that I had behind me, you know, my mum and my dad, having good figures there for me, you know, I got into debt pretty early, purchasing property and stuff like that. So always had that holding me to not like really be a larrikin. But always had responsibility, but I did go off the rails. Like one thing that never lost me was I worked hard with whatever I did. But it took me a little while to find my niche because ultimately I had to learn to walk again for you know, a good 6 to 12 months. And then I could intertwine with the boys. So then I was like, well, I didn't go out clubbing. I didn't do this, that. So I ended up being able to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I obviously was reliving a bit of that, but lucky I was young, like, and I did that then. And, you know, then I went through my period where all boys probably go through, I'd say, where, you know, they need that time to kind of have where they either go down the wrong path or they go down the right path. And with my parents, you know, backing and my family and having good, you know, morals and values that they preach, I ended up going down the right path. And, you know, I got married young in the end and I had kids young. But definitely, man, like it was a good 6 to 10 months where I was like, geez, I could have, if I think back, I could have been going down there. And then I would have been 27 thinking, geez, what am I doing? Like, and, you know, I grew up very young. I grew up quick when I was young. And do I regret it? No, I don't, because now I can see other people, mates and this and that, going through what I went through maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago. And now I'm like, okay, I've been there, I've done that. Now I've got other challenges in life. And that's where I try and help my mates, like, you know, if they ask and they want it, to say, okay, like, why don't you think of this? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? To try and be like a mentor, because I lived life young. I lived life in the fast lane. But I had a dog attitude, man. I just kept, like, whatever come in front of me, I just ran through it. And that's one thing that I'm lucky I had, because sometimes, like, people, if they had to retire, they'd be like, they're just going to sit here and say, why me?
Like, the world's over, basically. Yeah, exactly.
And then 5 years are going to go by, and guess what? Yeah. Like, in AFL world, I would have been 9, 10 years in now.
Yeah.
Like, if I kept thinking that, man, imagine 9, 10 years I've been thinking that. Yeah. Oh, man, I'd be nowhere. Mm. I just kept moving forward. So I'm grateful for that, grateful for people around me to give me that and help me. But yeah, like, it is a challenge, man. Yeah, for sure, man. It is a challenge.
100%.
So obviously football being your whole world, yep, and then that just being ripped away from you. Obviously, you know, you've explained how hard that was. But did you have, what happened next? Like, did you have a plan? Did you even think about a plan B, you know? How did your business come about? And
I didn't have a plan, to be honest. I just said, I got into debt. Obviously, I purchased property pretty young, at 18 or whatever it was. I had responsibilities. I could have gone and blown money, but lucky again, my dad, you know, said, do you want to do this or do you want to do that? And I decided to go down that path. Then I just said, okay, well, I've got to start from the start. Obviously, there was a period where I had a contract, so I was still getting paid, obviously, but I was retired. And West Coast were fantastic with that. They were amazing. They looked after me amazingly. So I said, oh, all right, well, I worked it out. I worked out the figures, and I said, well, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do something that's going to earn me money, and that, like, I can kind of do my own thing in the future and hopefully have a spin on it. Now, my dad was a sparky originally and always said I hated trades. Like, I'm never being a tradie. Somehow I ended up doing electrical. So I was getting, obviously, my contract, and I didn't care with the electrical, the apprenticeship. I just wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. The business side, the technical side, the everything. At that stage, you don't think running your own business. But I said, as I grew and I went through, I wanted to master it. And then, mate, I got to a point where I got towards the end, and I sat my contractor's license pretty early, and I just went in the deep end, mate, and went into business very young. And it was around COVID, and it was tough. Like, I was kind of like a deer in the headlights. A lot of things were changing and I didn't understand it. Took me a little bit to find my feet, but I had a lot of experience in different areas, not just in the field, but just even dealing with people and relationships. There was a period of time where, you know, I was off feet for a while. So, you know, I got to deal with builders, clients and this and that as an apprentice. But then, you know, as an A grade and stuff like that, I started to take on a bit more of a role. And that's why I said, you know what, I want to take my attitude that I had with football and see what I can do in a business sense. And the way I want to do it is, you know, I want to try and bring in the new school way, where, like, I saw that there was a gap in the industry where, you know, some people, you know, you overpromise and underdeliver. Whereas I said, well, you know what, my work ethic's a big part of what I do. What I'm going to do is I'm going to try and get one client, and I'm just going to make sure that they are well looked after, and then, you know, hopefully the word spreads and this and that. And that's how I started off, mate. Like, I just started off kind of just seeing what happened. I injected a bit of money into the business to start, so I didn't have to worry about finances and this and that, and you know, getting this, turning over this and this and that. Like, I didn't want that stress. Mm-hmm. I just said, I'm going to start small and see what happens. Eventually you network and you go through things and this and that, and you know, it's grown naturally. And how it's grown is from the team that I surrounded myself with, like my guys and my team, and I'm a big believer about brand. Like, your brand has to be quality. You don't, as just as good as you get a good name, you can lose that name,
sure,
mate, 10 times as quick.
Yep,
so I preach that into my guys. I, as much as there's, you know, probably a few that scatter everywhere and probably, you know, interstate and this and that, one thing I preach is the brand. Don't, like, this is what I want, this is what I expect, and I treat them like family. When it's time for business, it's business. When it's time, if they have a personal issue or this or that, they can call me. They don't have to go through 5 different people to come to me. They can call me direct. And, yeah, that's a bit of a detriment to my family, you know, my wife and my kids. Obviously, you know, they maybe don't get the best of me because, like, sometimes I am inundated with a phone call or I'm trying to help people with this or that. But that's my nature. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm trying to set up the building blocks so, you know, I can just kind of fine-tune things for when I'm comfortable of that happening and someone, you know, taking a bit more of a leadership role and stuff mm-hmm. like that and doing this and that. But one thing I always said is you always keep your finger on the pulse, because as soon as you kind of take your foot off the pulse and finger off the pulse, slowly, yeah, man, you start to lose that tangibility. Like I know where all the boys are today. I know what they're doing, what the queries are, what the concerns are. Yeah, they go through another port, like if it's on-site issue or this or that, but I know exactly where they are, what's happening, this and that. And that's, for me, that's not being controlling, that's just taking care of your business. And the boys respect that.
Sure.
And they get the results for me at the end of the day. Like, I can only do so much. Without the cattle, you can't do the work.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it has its challenges, but I guess we'll see where we kind of go. And, you know, I just want work to be a fun place where people can be comfortable and they can speak their mind, and also, like, they have that fine line between, you know, personal life and work. Don't take me for a ride, but also, you know, enjoy yourself as well. Like, work, you have to work because you have to live, but I don't want it to take over your life. I'm a big preacher of that. So, yeah, I guess, you know, Cab Vault, that's just, you know, that's the brand and that's what it is. And, yeah, like, I didn't expect it to kind of traject how it did, but it's a lot of hard work and, like, I'm not settled yet. Like, I still have a lot of work to do
mm-hmm.
to kind of hopefully, you know, make it consistent and make it to that level where I'm content and I'm happy.
What is that level?
What's that?
Like, what's the goal?
The goal is just to be honest, you know what? There is a goal in mind, like, obviously for what it is, but I just – obviously with the industry's a bit – everyone's obviously a bit – interest rates are high, things are happening, there's a lot of moving parts. The building construction game, you see, like, there's a lot of statistics out there where, you know, builders, contractors, everyone, you know, are in a very, very vulnerable space and field. My biggest thing is just like, just being consistent. Like, I just want to make sure that the guys or girls, whoever's a part of the business, when they come to work, they're happy. Like, I want people that are here for a number of years, not just turnover, like, mm-hmm. oh, come in, come out. Because to train and invest and put time into guys and girls and this and that,
of course,
it's hard, man. Like, that's time you don't get back. You don't get back that time. And then for people to come in and out, it affects your business and your flow. And also your clients start saying, geez, what's going on here? Why has he lost 10 guys? Or why has he lost this? Or why has he done that? And people start talking. So for me, like, you know, the building blocks are there, don't get me wrong, but it's like, okay, where can we really get this to? Where can we get it to where, you know, I can get it to a point where, as I said, I'm fine-tuning and people are, you know, taking charge and responsibility and are comfortable and they've got the systems in place where they can look after things where it's not, you know, like me calling the shots mm-hmm. or whatever it is. I want to be able to give that opportunity to people to help me on that journey as in a management hemisphere to help me drive it.
Yeah.
At the moment, the guys and that, like, they, you know, they do the work and stuff like that, but, like, my vision is only kind of, like, in my brain because at the moment, you know, like, you know, I share it with my team and, you know, admin and the guys out in the field, but ultimately, you know, you have to drive that. So I just wanted to be consistent in a happy workplace. I'm not here to take on the world. I don't operate like that. I just want to do a good job, have a good brand and deliver a good product. Whether that's big, small, medium, I don't care. I just want people to enjoy, like, you know, good relationships and good work. That's all. That's my goal. Some people, it's not about making money and ridiculous money and this and that. When you start looking at the color of the note that you're getting, you start looking, your business starts actually getting affected because when you look at that, you're actually losing part of like how you started.
Definitely.
I remember you always look at, oh, when's your next phone call coming? Like, whereas sometimes you're like, when's the phone stopping?
Mm.
And when you're in those moments, I always think back to it. Like, don't forget when you were actually trying to push and, you know, you get your business
that,
out. You wanted that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so enjoy it. Embrace it. Like, I love it, man. Like, I love talking to people on the phone. Like, my phone goes ballistic. I love it. And 9 times out of 10, we don't even talk about work. We talk about life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And
you build a personal
relationship.
That's
what it's like, mate. Mm. Like, the last thing I want to worry about, yeah, work is one thing, but, hey, I want to have fun. Like, this is something that I do 24/7.
Mm.
Like, it's not always about business. Definitely. Business is a small part, but it's the relationships you make. If you make strong relationships and you make them tangible, the business takes care of itself. Like, it does, mate. Like, you're at right. the end of the day, I don't care how big, small, whatever you are, but if you make good relationships and you deliver, the business and everything takes care of itself. It's proven.
Yeah.
And that's what I enjoy. Like, I enjoy people talking, you know, about their holidays or this or that they do, you know, this time of the year because, like, you look at it and you say, oh, like, at least they're comfortable to talk to you about that and this and that. It's not just like, hey, mate, can you do this or do that. Sometimes, yeah, it's like that. But you talk, you have a laugh, you get to know people, you get to know, say, you know, what's going on in their world, what challenges, say, other builders or clients or other contractors even are having. Like, I don't just keep it to my clients. I speak to other contractors because I'd rather, you know, get to know people around me because sometimes, you know, you might be a Sparky and you're going through the same issues through a business that I'm going through. And for me to, you know, say a couple things to you, maybe you've been through that experience and you can say, oh, look, I did this or did that. Mm-hmm. So you try and align yourself with people that, with good values and other businesses, and that's how you learn and grow. So I think people just get caught up in this, nah, like it's dog eat dog. But it shouldn't be like that. Like it should be, okay, like there's enough pie for everyone.
Definitely.
There's enough slices of pie for everyone. How can I maximize what pie that I have to put me in a good position, whether it's financially and as a business and as a workplace? How can I maximize that as best as what I possibly can rather than, you know, stomping on him or doing this or doing that or taking shortcuts? Because there's only one way when you do that stuff. Yep. It's only down. Yep. So you can't operate like that these days.
For sure, man.
Of course, ultimately, it's about being a good person too. You know?
You have to, mate. Good things come to the good people.
You're right.
That's right. It's funny how, like, you know, sports people like yourself, like us, you know, you've played at the highest level. The natural progression is always business.
Yeah.
What would you say, like, is the biggest thing that footy taught you that you can apply to your business or that you have applied to your business?
Footy, the beauty about footy, what it taught me was it taught me to be committed to something and work hard, and also dealing with different people. In a team sport, you deal with so many different personalities. Like, there would have been hundreds of teammates I've had, you know, 20-plus coaches I've had throughout it, whether it's development or not. Like, it taught me in a business sense that you have to work as a collective to get a given goal. Like, you can't just do everything yourself. And when you do, yeah, you'll last maybe 1, 2, 3 weeks, but you'll end up burning out. And the only way for you to succeed is to work hard. There's no other ingredient to success other than luck, which luck isn't even an ingredient. That's just luck.
Do you believe in luck? Or do you make your own luck?
You make your own luck. Yeah. Some people are lucky, but in my life, I'll be honest, adversities, I've had a crap ton of bloody adversities. So, like, to be honest, luck hasn't kind of come my way. I'll think it's always been something that I've had to push through or fight through or get through this or get through that. So, like, you know, the old saying, you might get knocked down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, but eventually you'll get back up. You know what I mean? Like, that's what sport and football and that taught me. It taught me good relationship skills, working towards a common goal with a collective, and using people around you to succeed, to help you succeed and help them succeed. And also work ethic. Like, if you have a teammate that's dragging his weight and he comes back a bit tubby after, you know, off season, what's he got to do? He's got to shed the weight, and he's got to work twice as hard. And that's going to put him in a good spot to help your team. And I guess that's kind of what's helped me put that into the business. Don't get me wrong, I'm nowhere near perfect, but I try to be as perfect as I can be with whatever I do. And sport taught me that. I've never done really an individual sport as such, but like, I wouldn't know how to do an individual sport because you need your team around you. And like, you know, even tennis, for example, like these superstars playing tennis, yeah, it's an individual sport, but they have a team around them as well. So it's still the same attitudes and mentalities. Doesn't matter what you do. You can do sport, you can do business, you can, you know, even if it's packing shelves or doing this or that, like, everything relates. Yeah. It's not like, oh no, he's doing something secret or whatever it is. There's no secret. All it is it just comes down to, you know, working hard and making the most of the opportunities. Like, that's all it is. And when you do a job, do it good. That's like, sure. You can tie your shoelace. You can tie your shoelace one way where, you know, it comes undone in 2 minutes, or you can tie it properly where it's not going to come undone when you go for a run. Like, just do it properly, mate. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
totally agree.
I just wanted to finish up because I think you'd be a perfect person to give advice. What advice would you give to sort of young players that now you've gone through all these, like, you know, ups and downs when you were like 17, 18? What would you tell your younger self, let's say?
Tell my younger self, I'd probably say enjoy the moments as you go through life. Like, take each opportunity that you have and give it a red hot crack, because at the end of the day, you might think it seems like a lifetime, but it's not a lifetime. When you're in that moment, like, go hard with it. Like, whether it's playing football, playing soccer, playing lawn bowls, whatever it is, cricket, like, give it your 110% detail and attention to detail, because you never know what could happen. Like, you never know what could happen. And surround yourself with good people, because when you do that, sometimes things can just happen. Do you know what I mean? And the biggest ingredient for success is, like, by no means I'm not successful. I'm trying to push to that. But, like, the biggest ingredient for it is just work ethic, mate. And, like, stay in your lane and run your own race. Like, if you start worrying about those around you, that's when you get sidetracked. Like, and that's where social media is a big thing. Definitely. Like, if someone's doing fantastic, pat them on the back and maybe tap into their brain and their knowledge, because they can give it to yourself. Don't get envious or jealous or think you need to be there, and give yourself timelines. Like, run your own race and set yourself up properly. Like, work hard, tick off each goal as they come. That's probably the biggest thing. When you're young, you're keen, this and that, you just want to go a bull at a gate. And I did that, and sometimes you fall. Whereas if you think about it, you put a goal in place, you hit that goal, you go to the next one, you support people around you, eventually things do turn. But just be happy with what you do, mate. Like, not everyone has to be, you know, not everyone has to be successful and this and that. What people deem success is different. You'll deem it different. I will. You will. Anyone will. You know, we're fortunate. We live in a good country. We got good opportunities. So everyone has their own way of living. But, that's the main thing. Like, can't really add much more to it.
You've covered all bases here. And, look, it's been an honour to have you on.
Yeah. It's been an absolute pleasure, man.
Amazing chat, honestly. But, look, the way you've changed, you know, I know myself, man, just going through something like that, if I was to go through something like that, it'd be a big challenge, man. Yeah. Like, I'd feel like the world's over, man.
Yeah.
You've made, like, your dream move, and then all of a sudden, bang. So for me, man, it's honestly, it's a testament to your character and mentality. And I wish you all the best with your family, your business. And, yeah, it's been an amazing chat, man.
Nah, I appreciate it, and it's good to meet again. It's you're doing good things.
Oh, thank you, man.
As I said, man, I don't do social media. So when I saw it, I'm like, Matt.
I know, man. It's been a while.
I'm like, that's crazy, man. So, good on you, and keep doing good things.
Thank you.
And thanks for having me on.
No worries. Thank you once again. Absolute pleasure. Incredible story. If you haven't, give Cavolt a follow on that. Are you on Instagram?
I do. I'm not on there flat out, but
the business is.
Yeah.
Give him a follow. We'll tag him. Make sure you give him a follow. Thank you once again for joining us on another episode of the Almost Made It podcast. If you haven't already, make sure you're following us on Spotify, subscribing to YouTube, follow us on Instagram,
TikTok,
all the rest of it. You know the spiel.
You know, every week.
Every week, the same thing. So, thank you very much. We'll see you next episode.